Well, I hope you all are staying cool because this particular Sunday is that sermon that I consider to be hot. And I should be putting out hot air here today because this passage is so much a popular passage, but it is Jesus taking us deeper into what it means to love thy neighbor. And you can see as I have prepared this sermon and worked to bring it to us today, I keep adding more things. I got lots of them here. And I made a bunch of more notes this morning. So this is a 3-hour sermon that I'll have to knock down to about a few minutes. But thank you, group, for acting out our passage today. I've declared that Luke 10 last week is a model for the emergent church. Last week in the first part of the chapter, Jesus, as he sent forth the 70 two by two, declared them in verse 4, greet no one on the road. That's very interesting. They're going out to a town and to a village, and they're knocking on doors, but they're to greet no one on the road. That's a very much a dichotomy between that and today. The same chapter in Luke 10. The disciples being sent forth to enter towns, were to sharing the gospel, but going to homes and knocking on the doors kind of thing. But today, it's that victim lying there on the ground. And Jesus is noting who passed by. The Levite. People who were highly or very high in the hierarchy of the church. And the priest as well. Not the church, of course. It was the Jewish world at that time. So what is the difference in Jesus' teaching of last week and Jesus' teaching of this week? The disciples are being sent forth with a specific assignment then and this week, in addition to God's peace and God's good news. Their journey is identified then, but to this week, they have specific instructions. I mean, last week they did. They go out into as wolves or as people in the midst of wolves. But here today, we have them passing by. And who comes to the rescue? You all have heard this sermon 100 times or more. Who comes? It's the Samaritan. The one who has been rejected by society. The one who has to live up into their own place up in the mountains. The Samaritan community. And the Jewish world has rejected them. There's been a theological difference and debate for many centuries. And there are divisions. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, to like our world today? Great divisions, and then Jesus comes forth and lifts up, not the Levite and the priest, but the Samaritan, that other person, that other culture who was considered to be broken away from the Hebrew law. So what about our lives today? How often do we pass by the one in need, lying on the road? I would say if we take that literally, I don't see any of us doing that in today's world. If there's an accident and you're driving down the road, you know, unless you're on an emergency going somewhere to take care of someone else in a crisis, you're going to stop by and take care of that person. I mean, even if it's just, I remember one day right here on 6th Street, a car broke down up at the traffic light. There's a whole line of us waiting behind, and all the people that get out and go push that car and help that person, and that's the way people are in today's world. We're gonna take care of that person in need. And the rescue community today, I mean that in the sense of first responders, and I've been there counseling with many of those first responders that are working on the emergency squads or even our police officers at the time, our firefighters. They're all first responders. I don't know if we have any volunteer firefighters here or other people who work in that world of being a first responder in crisis. But, you know, that's what we do today. And we've done for a long time. So we still have that loving neighbor within us. But Jesus is, as I said earlier, is taking us deeper with this parable of the Good Samaritan. Deeper into the loving thy neighbor commandment. And while on the one hand, we have been saying all along since we first start talking about loving thy neighbor as yourself, as a commandment of Jesus, and we said we want to just do it with the basics. You know, we're loving people all over the world. Even in our vacation Bible school, we talked about all these other nations that teach the children that we love people everywhere. But when we do that, we seem to go to the way of letting our own neighbors go. And so we're trying to spread throughout Lancaster and Fairfield County, many of the churches, going back to what we call Loving Thy Neighbor 101, the basics of just knocking on your own neighbor's door. And that's a good place to start, and we need to continue that process, and we'll continue it. But today I want to take us in a little bit deeper step. Let's see what some churches are doing. First of all, are any of us going into the deeper step? Well, one of the things I learned this week is that the Vineyard Church, and by the way, when we're acting or when we're learning to love our neighbor, we also need to love our fellow churches. And that's been quite a challenge for us in our world of the last 50 years in the differences of loving our neighbor. We can love the people, but that church, oh, we leave them over there. But we're trying to break that as well. But here's an example. I thought this was very interesting. The Vineyard Church this week, well, they've announced it, but it's July 27th, are having a benefit poker run. A poker run. When their pastor announced that to our pastor group this week, it's for a great cause. I said, a poker run, a Vineyard Church? He said, well, our church isn't sponsoring it. We're just supporting it, and it's one of our children that has need. I said, well, you know, I was known in West Virginia as the anti-gambler guy. So, and I'm from the liberal church. So, but anyway, but think of that. How do you love your neighbor? They're willing to dig a little bit deeper and even do something that they probably preached against for a long time. But, you know, we're not talking about a major gambling thing here. We're talking about a minor gambling thing, a fun, to support a young man named Bryle Pearson, who has a particular health need. So that's one way to start getting a little bit deeper into loving our neighbor. You know, the corporations in America, boy, we all know they teach love your neighbor. I mean, State Farm, what is it? Like a good neighbor. State Farm is here. That's not a commercial, I hope. So last night, I was breaking the rules. Well, yesterday afternoon, actually, at my granddaughter's birthday party, they had ordered pizza. And they all know that I can't eat pizza with all that cheese on it. But, so my plate stayed clean. And it was from Donato's. So I start reading this plate. The plate says, after advertising pizza subs and salads and things, it says, good neighbor. We promise to be a good neighbor by being a positive influence in the community. That means conducting our business with respect for the community and maintaining our stores to be an asset to the neighborhood. This our promise to you. Well, I thought I better show up at Donato's over here on Main Street and see if they got some more of these plates and how do we partner with them on this neighbor thing. So that's the other thing I added to this sermon. But let me ask this question. If Donato's and State Farm, you know, we may or may not believe in the corporate world and its power and all that and its advertising, but if many of us consider them good neighbors because of the way they campaign, is Grace Church considered by the community at large to be a good neighbor? I hope it is. I haven't heard it is not. But that's something that we need to continually look at and monitor. But let me go then a little bit deeper. You see, it's not just the person lying here that's been beat up by the robbers that we care for specifically, but what about the general problem of people who are hurting and people who have been victimized and people who have been traumatized and people who've never recovered from the stress? My generation, that's the Vietnam veteran. Yes, I was participated in many demonstrations against the Vietnam War as a young person. But I learned as I was going into the pastorate and working in the world and started discovering that it was Vietnam vets were the homeless ones in the community. And I actually had brought on a VISTA worker. I trained VISTAs in part of my career around the country and in Chicago. And so one of my VISTAs was a Vietnam vet. He happened to be an African-American man. And I couldn't quite get him to comprehend what he had to do. And we would go on these trainings all over the country. They would be in the inner city. Someone would say, "Where are you going?" I'd say, "Cleveland." "Oh, what'd you do up there? Did you go to the, you know, this or that activity?" I said, "No, we go to the inner city and stay in the violent places." But this particular VISTA just couldn't grasp it. So when it came time to renew, I did not renew him. Oh, he took a challenge to me, called me a racist, and took it to Washington, D.C. And Washington, D.C. decided on my side. I was very fortunate in that regard. But then it was about 6 months after this, I discovered he was a victim of Agent Orange. And we didn't hardly know what Agent Orange was then. And so he really had been given a lot of problems as a military veteran and, of course, never recovered from Agent Orange. So how do we, you know, it's always a little deeper than where we go and who we think we're helping. And so the vets are one thing. How do we help the Vietnam veterans? And as this war came out, that we finally are starting to see the ends to these two wars, I think I've shared with you before, I jumped on immediately saying, we've got to care for these veterans so we don't repeat what we had in Vietnam. A little bit deeper on this Samaritan question. Who do we help? We all hear about the gay community, the homosexual community, the LGBT community, and there's been so much division within our nation, within our church at large, and within a church local on these questions about receiving and being open and affirming to these people, and whether or not a pastor should be welcome who falls into one of those categories. So what do we do with Jesus' message? If they are truly victims and have been victimized, how do we make decisions individually, and how do we make decisions congregationally to love our neighbor as we love ourselves? I thought a few weeks ago when the Boy Scouts had voted the way they voted, that a Boy Scout who is aware and declares that they are gay, they can remain in Boy Scouts. I see that as an opportunity for a church like Grace. Are there any churches around town who have canceled their relationship with Boy Scouts of America? Should we go exploring, accepting that troop? Or is it time to explore starting a Boy Scout under that? I don't have a yes or a no to that, but I raise the question because I think, again, the Good Samaritan takes us a little deeper. And right now, of course, been in the news last week of many African countries. And as Africa, Christianity grows and magnifies and has outgrowing Christianity in the United States. In Africa, the discrimination of the homosexual community, the gay community, has increased considerably. And when I say discrimination, I'm talking about death for many people who are known to be gay. Many of the United Church of Christ has taken at least verbal stands and website stands to support that part of the community in Africa, even though much of the Christian community there are anti-gay people. Just for example, the United Methodist Church here in America is also the United Methodist Church of Africa, and wherever the United Methodists are all around the world. And so when they have an assembly and they come together and pass resolutions or whatever it is, it's not just someone from Minnesota and Ohio voting, it's someone from Africa voting. Just as many of them are coming forth. And so the United Methodists does not look like they're going to be able to endorse saying clergy can be gay and be ministers in their church, because the African community will not vote for it. How do we address these questions? Let's go on to Texas. The law that was voted on this week, restricting abortions. Here's my question. Will a stricter law that most likely forces clinics to close in Texas, abortion clinics, will it help or hinder the protection? Because will more women go off into hiding and have abortions? And they often are, like in the old days, they are the ones who are victimized. They're the ones who are injured when they go through the process. So how do we go about making decisions that support people in these tough decision times, regardless of where we are on the question? I hope you can see the relationship as going deeper. It kind of reminds me of that, of the psalm. And remember the psalm, here's God and here's a gathering of gods kind of around the table. I don't know if you ever recall that psalm before, but the Word of God says there's gods gathering around the table, and God Almighty is the head of that table, of those gods. So much of this we're creating as our gods, our leaders, what we stand for, how we face the world. But how much of it is us listening to our God? We always have to be about sorting that out. Back to Boy Scouts. When I was young, I've shared with you some Boy Scout stories related to me passing through Lancaster. We used to pass through Chillicothe. We'd go hiking. And a man named Norm Lehman had hiking trails. And we'd all gather there and hike 10 or 20 miles that day and get a hiking medal. It was a great, great day. Well, one of those times, our troop had gone down there and we're waiting to be sent off on a trail. And there's another couple troops there. And I'm sure the scoutmasters were inside. They had to pay our fee and greeting each other and talking to Norm. And finally, we're waiting and waiting. It seems to be extra long. And we come out, or they come out, and all the scouts, or each troop, is asked to line up. So one troop lines up, and there's a man that comes forth and looks at them. And he said, no, none of them. And we're all wondering, well, what happened? Well, someone had, according to this man, taken a large stone and crashed it through his windshield. His car was there. The windshield was a mess. So they lined up the troops, and when they lined up our troop, the man looked over each one of us, and he pointed right at, you guess, to me. And I didn't even know what they were talking about. And fortunately, my scoutmaster says, knew that I was such an innocent little guy. You've heard some of my stories, you know them better. He said, except for me walking in there right now, say hi to you, gentlemen, He's never been out of my sight this morning, so it couldn't have been him. I said, thank God. You see, how do we act to care and love our neighbor? How do we learn from the Good Samaritan? That's what I'm wanting us to bring us up today. How do we decide? I have my fan. I got a fan today, folks. This fan we passed out a few years ago. I'm voting for kids. I'm voting for kids. There's an organization helping us see that there are so many issues out there in our political world, in our state government, our county governments, our city governments, and our federal government. Do we ever say, do we ever look deeper based upon this loving our neighbor, lifting up the ones that are in trouble? Do we ever make sure, as we consider who we're voting for, this person is best for children? Again, going a little bit deeper. There may be some legitimate excuses, or legitimate reasons is a better word, that calls Grace Church forward to help someone or to help a cause that's helping many people. There may be that time that we just pass by on the other side because there's a legitimate reason. We cannot, in this world, we cannot respond to every need out there. We can't. It's just look at the news this week and the prayer concerns. It would be just impossible for us to make a major response to each one of those news items of the last couple weeks with tragedies happening near and far. But we can decide when and where to help. Just as an example, it's a regular thing for a church to have that phone call that comes and wants someone in need who needs money for food or needs money to pay the electric bill. And the way we've worked to do that is, of course, we've supported an organization or organizations that do that. And that's a good way to do it. But sometimes you still have to go forward because those organizations aren't in a place to support that particular person right now. So sometimes we have to decide, even though we can't resolve everything, we can jump in this, we can jump in that. I was at Shepherd Road Christian Church in northern Ohio, Summit County, many years ago. And we were having ecumenical Lenten services. We had churches come from all over the neighborhood. And we were hosting it that evening. And it was very interesting that the service was at 7, and around 5 o'clock, this happened all the time at that church, someone knocked on the door. He was a man who needed help. He needed food, and he needed transportation clear back to the other side of Columbus, far south side. This is on the, I'm not Columbus, I'm talking about Summit County, far to the other side of Summit County, and needed help. So I said, well, here's what I did in those days. If someone knocked on the door and needed help, I said, let's go to lunch or dinner. This was dinner. I said, come to dinner with me. I'll feed you. So we go out to dinner and we talk. And I discover, while I'm waiting to go to dinner, that he plays the piano. He says, can I play your piano? I said, sure. He sits down and plays wonderfully. I said, wow. So we go to dinner. He said, hey, I sing too. What do you about think about me? And I'm telling him about a service that evening. I got to hurry back. And he said, I'd be glad to play and sing in your service. I said, well, I have to ask the other pastors. So the other pastors show up, and I say, can we have him play and sing? And they said, well, sure. So he plays and sings, and it just, everybody melts away. And then we have a little reception at the end of the service. And then he asked me to take him clear back down the other side of the county, take him home. And I do that. And I get back the next morning, I hear all kind of phone calls from clergy. He ripped off this person from their church and this person from their church. He said some of them gave him $50, some of them gave him $25. And I said, you know, we're trying to be the Good Samaritan, and sometimes it backfires in your face. So it also backfires sometimes on the issues. So today I hope, as we look at the needs around our lives, and we see God at that table with other gods that we choose, God Almighty, in our lives. So I hope I shortened this 3-hour sermon down enough. God bless you.